you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode of Believe You Me with myself, Michael Bisping, and of course, my trusty co-host, Luis J. Gomez. We've got Brian McKay in the background and Harrington floating around somewhere. Luis, how you doing, buddy? So listen, I'm watching the news last night. You know, because I like to have my finger on current events, Luis. I don't know about you. Are you a news watcher? Do you give a damn about the news?
I consume my news typically via New York Times printout at Equinox. They print out like probably the top 10 or 12 news stories into a little thing. Oh. And then I bring it into the Equinox steam room and I read it in the steam room and I read what all the rich white people are reading. And I feel like I'm keeping myself abreast.
Yeah, I was going to say, and you have a little snippet of the Financial Times with you as well. Oh, Jeeves, bring me today's indices in the stocks and shares, please. I'd like to see what the FTSE and the Dow is doing today whilst I steam. Who are you? You have changed, Lewis. Once upon a time, you know, you'd be like, yeah, I go to Reddit for my news. Now you're taking a little mini condensed version into the steam room, sitting there, larded on, flicking over the pages and going,
I get all of my news from the Fighter and the Kid subreddit. That's how I keep my my finger on what's going on in society. It's whatever the homeless cats have to say, then I'm right there with them.
Go on. Sorry, my bad.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I don't really like watching the news. Most of the time when my TV's on at home, my kid is there. It's very dark and dreary. Like, my son doesn't know what rape is or what, like, sexual assault is. And that's all that's on the news lately. And I just feel like I want to keep him a little bit innocent. So I don't typically have that on in my house. And I actually think it's kind of weird when the news does come on and they're like, you know, three women were, you know, murdered and raped by a... You're like, dude, he's seven. He's sitting right there. Fucking chill out. Yeah. 4 o'clock news.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy because, you know, in America, you guys, I don't know, it's kind of weird. Like any swear words you dub out, okay? Even if it's midnight, you dub the swear word out. But if at 4 o'clock in the afternoon that's showing, you'll show somebody's heads getting blown off their shoulders, but you'll dub out tits or you'll dub out ass or jerk or fuck you. That'll all be dubbed out, but someone's head getting blown off. In my opinion, seeing someone's head getting blown off is worse than hearing a bad word. But that said, going back to the news, you're right. I was sitting there last night and there was a story which blew my mind. We'll get to that in a second, but it's just negativity. And that is what the news feeds off. Like, you know, I'll bring up the coronavirus again. You know, it's starting to get more and more serious, but you don't know what to believe. You know what I mean? Because that is how the news, that's how they make money. You know, scandal, sensationalism, that's how headlines, they need headlines. So it's good for them to exaggerate things. You know, they're not going to give you good news. Bad news is what they're trying to deliver.
Well, fear is something that, and we watched it happen. 9/11 was when it became very apparent. That's when I sort of watched like every week it was like red alert, orange alert, terrorist attack at any moment. And I was like, wait a minute. Like they're capitalizing and selling ad space off of our fears, our greatest fears, you know, and that's sort of, it's this weird evil thing. Now, yes, there's a way to get the news and it's important, but now that we have the internet and we have our fingertips and we have multiple sources and it's not just these specific finite sources. I think it's kind of even weird to even watch the news. But yeah, the negativity sells. I mean, is Australia better? I don't even know. Just honestly, we're three news cycles away from the burning koala bears. They could be alive right now. They could have restored peace. The entire country of Australia could be on fire right now. It's just not the story of the week.
Exactly. I think regarding the fires, I think it's somewhat under control, but you're right. If I'm not mistaken, certain parts of New South Wales are still very much ablaze. But as you say, that's passed by now. Everybody's had their fill of that. You know, you've seen so many cute koalas. You're like, oh, fuck it. It's not getting the clicks that it used to. Fuck the fires. Fuck the kangaroos. Fuck the koalas. Let's move on. What do we need now? Coronavirus. Let's go, baby boy. Give it a couple of weeks. It's going to be something else. But that's what they do. That's what they do. They're trying to get your attention. And get my attention, they did last night. I'm sitting there last night and I'm watching. I mean, most days in my house start the same. I get out of bed, have my coffee, put the news on. Whilst the news is on, I scroll Instagram. And, you know, and then I get sick of that news. I change to something else. I go to an app. I go to Sky News in England, you know, la-di-da. I want some European news. I want some news from out of the country. I want some worldwide news. I need to keep a grasp of the hot topics, Lewis.
The Yorkshire tea farms have been set ablaze for days. There will be no crumpets next week in Wittenbergshire.
Granny Smith's t-shirt will be closed this week due to a nasty flood which happened. It's leaking from the roof, and I'm sorry, no scones.
There are less crannies and nooks in these muffins than normal. Today at 6 o'clock.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Anyway, last night, so I'm sitting there, I'm having a nice glass of mud water, believe it or not, before I went to the gym, and it comes on the news. And there it is. I couldn't believe this. A six-year-old kid, by all accounts, from what I'm hearing, this little kid was throwing a tantrum, being, you know, being a naughty little girl. But unfortunately, that's what happens. Children like that at 6 years old are not in check of their emotions. They can't handle them. They have tantrums. They fall on the floor. And the school calls a cop and arrests the girl, puts fucking zip ties on her and puts her in the back of a police car. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, what are we watching here?
Yeah, it was really bizarre. The video itself, we'll play some of the video in a minute. It's actually, as a parent for me, and it's so not on brand for us to be having these fucking conversations because we do sound like normal, like newscasters. Like, it was just haunting. The sound of this little girl was, and it was though. I heard the sound of a little, because they go to put the zip ties on her. I guess the girl's being, you know, whatever.
Why zip ties? Fucking zip ties. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we're not controlling a terrorist here. They're not getting the guy that just rappelled up the side of One Life Fitness in the last episode. Okay, they're getting a little six-year-old girl that's being a madam. As a little six-year-old girl that needs a stern talking to, needs her dolls taken away, her pram taken away, locked up, whatever the punishment's going to be. She does not need zip ties. Fucking zip ties. My God.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess they wanted to emulate her being arrested. They didn't. Now, the story is they didn't actually arrest her. They put her in the police car, then they let her come back in. I guess she must have been acting up, and the principal, they have police that patrol the schools. So they, teach her a lesson, they were like, well, the police are going to take you away now. And the little girl just starts breaking down, being like, please don't, please don't. And, you know, I have a friend of mine who was like, yeah, dude, it's good. You know, I feel like, you know, kids, they get away with too. I'm like, dude, you got to understand this, okay? Number one, you have a kid who's 6 years old. They're in this formative stage of their life where, you know, who fucking knows how much damage that could really do. Putting that is a traumatic experience. I've been arrested. The first time I got arrested, I was like put in handcuffs. I was maybe 18 or 19 for smoking weed in New York City. And it was fucking traumatic. I almost cried. I remember being in a thing, being like, if my boys weren't there, if I was alone, I would have cried unquestionably. No questions asked. Now, for a little girl, you can imagine how much that affects. You don't know where you're going. You hear about jail. You hear about bad things. And I don't know, but it was a black girl, black principal. The policemen were Hispanic. I'm just assuming it was like, you know, more of an urban area. I could be wrong about that. I don't know. But it's like, I'm assuming her perspective already is sort of skewed as to what the police do. And now maybe programming this girl to who fucking knows where her life now goes.
It's a slippery slope. You know, you're in there. Next minute, she's affiliated with the gang. She's got a face tattoo. You know what I mean? She's involved in a little bit of petty drug dealing around the place. She comes out of there. She's not a reformed character. She hasn't been, rehabilitated, man, right about now.
Right about now.
She hasn't been rehabilitated. No, she's gone down the other way. Of course, we're being silly. It was just shocking. I'm sitting there and I'm just like, oh my God. So I'm hearing now that the policeman that did that has been fired. And again, I do feel sorry for that guy as well. You know, even though it was too much, I don't know if somebody should have lost a job over it. I guess they were trying to teach a lesson. I guess they were trying to show tough love, which does work. And to your friend's point, the one that you said you were talking to, I do feel that you know, in this day and age, people are too soft on children. I'm not saying they need to be beaten. I'm not saying they need, you know, they need to be held accountable. You know, and accountability is definitely more and more absent these days. But still, taking a young girl, throwing her in the back of a police van. I mean, my God, if that was my daughter, and I'm not trying to sound tough, I'd have lost my shit.
Yeah.
100%. I don't know what if I'd have got there and they were putting my daughter in the back of a van like that, I would have definitely, you know.
I'd be in the back of the van.
I'd be in the back of the van. And I'm not trying to sound tough, but I'd put my hands on that policeman.
There's no question.
You get your fucking hands off my daughter right now, this second. Fucking give me those things, cut those ties off. Shame on you. Go fuck yourself. And then it would have been me that got arrested.
Oh, for sure, dude. There's no way. I mean, it's just you with your kid, you just see red. Your job is to protect them, good or bad. We've talked about this plenty of times. You know, my mom used to be the first person to come into the school, even though I was a fucking asshole and I was regularly fucking up. She'd be the first person to defend me. She'd beat the shit out of me at home, but she'd be the first person down there, you know, calling out the teachers, calling out the school, you know. So I get it. And that's a good quality. It's when they talk, we touched on this a while ago, but when they, you know, Aunt Becky from Full House, when they put her in jail for like scamming the college things, I was going like, it's a parent. They're supposed to fucking do whatever they can do to get their kid as far as possible. Maybe breaking the law or scamming some college thing is the best way to go about it. But I don't think that's enough of a crime to take somebody's freedom away from them, loving their kid enough to the point where they would cross certain legal boundaries. I think it's probably a commendable quality, more so than a bad quality.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I had an important text there. No, 100%. And I feel like any parent in any situation is going to do whatever they can, whether it's legal or illegal. You know, if you need to help out your child right then and there, I would. I'd certainly blur those lines. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that I'm a criminal, but come on. You know what I mean? You got to do what you got to do. When I was a kid, my mom and dad, they were very, very different. The school, because I was a little shit when I was a kid, you know, I've talked about this before, and they were always getting called into the school. And my mom would go in there and she'd join in. So like the headmaster would sit there and start tearing a strip off me, saying he does this, he does that, he's rude, he's often late, he doesn't do his homework. You'll notice, by the way, none of these things were that bad. They're not that bad. You know what I mean? Just little typical little shitty kids.
Yeah.
And my mom would sit there, join on. She'd be going, oh yes, and he swears at me, and he doesn't tidy his bedroom, and he hasn't made his bed in weeks, and I'm like, well, shut the fuck up, mom. They already think I'm the devil as it is, you know. And that would be my mom. My dad, on the flip side, he'd come in and he'd threaten to sue the school. He would have my back no matter what. He'd be on his feet, he'd be calling him names. Mr. Cesarak was a Polish, he was a head of the upper school. Mr. Cesarak was Polish, and obviously you know, the story goes that we're Polish aristocracy. My dad's calling him a Polish peasant in his office and all kinds of stuff. So to his face, he would have their back. But as soon as we got out of the school and in the car, fuck me, he'd beat the crap out of us. You know what I mean? But I respected that. At least in front of them, have my back. But then when we got home, it's like, right, listen, you can't act like that. You can't do that. I am sick of coming into the school. So
it's a united front. The dad, or mom, dad, whatever it is, you're the leader of your family, and it's a united front. And a good leader is going to get his team's back, right? And it's not, you know, and that's sort of the way that I look at it. I really do think it's a commendable quality. This little girl, I don't know exactly what happened. I know her grandmother was a person giving the statement, which leads me to believe that her parents probably aren't in the picture or aren't in the picture enough. If you look at this little girl, if she's acting out that way and she's six, parents aren't in the picture. You know, what do you think? You think it's this little girl's fault? You think putting her in handcuffs is going to fucking help the situation? Or do you think this little girl needs a hug? You think she needs a story to be read to her? Do you think maybe she needs some fucking love in her life to where she's not, you know, whatever, lashing out in whatever way she is for attention, love, anger? There's something there, and putting her in fucking handcuffs and putting her in the back of the car and scaring her is not helping her. I'd love to look at the numbers, because I bet you once somebody's put in cuffs, whatever the percentages are, that much more likely to be arrested again, and they're that much more likely to get in trouble again. I bet you there's a chance you're putting this girl down on a really bad path.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Listen, I don't know what those numbers are, and we'll take a look at the video in a second, but yeah, you're right. I mean, as you say, it was the grandma. That does allude to the fact that maybe the parents aren't around, so therefore that alludes to also a possible cause for the bad behavior, the lack of discipline, and all the rest of it. And as you said, you know, just again, just dealing this girl an extra shitty circumstance isn't going to help. Now, of course, we're assuming a lot of things here. Who knows? Maybe she's fucking living in a beautiful full mansion somewhere, but I highly doubt it. But let's take a look. I'm doing a lot of deciphering. I did see it on the news, but let's remind myself and the viewers with what happened last night by taking a look at the video.
Yeah.
The desert goes...
Okay, she's going to have to come with us now.
Okay, okay.
Pause it for 1 second. I know we're early to be pausing it, but I want to also say the girl's reading a book in a calm manner. I mean, what are we doing at this point? You've already alleviated the issue. Whatever you already did worked.
Yeah, yeah, because I'm seeing a very calm scene here. She's sitting behind the desk.
That is the administrator, it seems.
No, I know the administrator's reading the book with the girl, though.
Administrator, principal, mother, whoever it fucking is. What we're seeing is a woman at a desk, an official of some sort, and the little six-year-old girl, the tantrum is over. You know what I mean? The little burst of energy, the uncontrollable emotions. It's done. It's been and gone. It happens to all of us. We all threw tantrums as a child, and now the policeman's walking in, and he still continues to do this. It's fucking crazy, but go on, carry on.
Stand up. Okay, come over here.
What are those for?
It's for you.
Keep your hand, okay? Come over here, honey. It's not gonna hurt.
No! Okay, no, I want handcuffs on! No! Don't put handcuffs on!
Pause it. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, geez, Louise, I get it. I guarantee that part of the reason, and I am assuming here, so I shouldn't say guarantee, but I'll assume that part of the reason he put the zip ties on is because they have a standard protocol. And regardless of who you arrest, when you put them in the back of the car, van, whatever it is, you have to have them restrained either with cuffs or zip ties. But come on, man, use a little bit of logic. You're dealing with a six-year-old girl that is terrified and begging you not to.
I don't even think that's true, by the way. I don't think that that's standard protocol because I don't believe they actually arrested her. I think I read into it. They also did this with another 7-year-old kid that day from the school. And, you know, I guess the officer was talking about how they do this. They go in and sort of, it's a scare tactic more than anything else. My understanding, maybe I'm wrong. I'm sure people will comment on it if either of us are wrong. But I think, yeah, maybe if they're actually arresting you, yeah, there's a protocol. They have to make sure everyone's safe. But they weren't actually arresting the girl. They brought her to the car. They brought her back into the school. The situation was already de-escalated. This situation, if you're putting cuffs on somebody in general, okay, and Bisping, you've been in a jail cell before. You've had cuffs put on you before. You feel like a fucking piece of shit. You feel like less than life. You feel like you are a part of, like, dude, they take your freedom from you. Anybody who's been arrested before, anybody who's had, and I'm not saying cops are bad people. I was committing crimes when I've been arrested. I was smoking weed in the street or jumping at turnstiles, doing some stupid shit, right? Not to say that they should arrest people for that either, take their freedom away for it, but I'm not complaining. I'm just letting you know how it feels. It feels very demoralizing and you feel very lost. And from a kid's perspective, I mean, it has to be, you know, compounded by 100 times.
Yeah, but that's the whole point, to be honest. I mean, you do want to be shamed into behaving better. You know, I mean, it is very shameful in a public place. The cops have to show up. They put the cuffs on you. You know, it's embarrassing. You need to be taught a lesson. And rules are there to follow. And this is coming from me. And I, you know, unfortunately, I've been in a police cell many times when I was younger. And just to your point, yeah, I always probably fucking deserved it. You know what I mean? I was always fucking getting into a scrap or a fight or being a little shit as a kid. You know what I mean? I remember.
And with they needed those cuffs, by the way. With the Bisping, the cuffs were a great idea. This little girl, sort of unnecessary.
I don't know what to say. No, but listen, let's watch the rest of this before I comment. Because, by the way, a lot of people are going to say we're being too soft. And I do believe that kids do need to be taught a lesson. But this was just a bridge too far, in my opinion. But carry on, Brian.
Help me.
Let's go.
Your grandma can come pick you up, okay?
Oh, I was here at school. I just got you.
Come on, let's go.
No, please let me go.
Okay, come on. You can tell me what happened in the car, okay?
Mm. It's a little fucking girl. It's a little girl. It's so sad. It's really making me angry. I want to punch that cop in his fucking mouth right now. You know what I do? You know what I do? At that point, if that's my job, I quit. I quit my fucking job. I don't care. I don't care. I don't give a shit what it is. You know, there's no way about that. A little girl is begging for you to stop. She's 6 years old. She's not hurting anybody. She doesn't need to be restrained. She doesn't need to be scared. She doesn't know where she's going, who's taking her, where they're taking her. Fuck you. Do you quit your job?
Hold on. So you're Officer Lewis, right? Things aren't going as well. You've moved.
Officer Lewis.
Officer Lewis, okay? Things aren't going as well. You've moved out of Manhattan. You're now living down in Orlando. You're working as a cop. Officer Lewis is on patrol, right? You've been working that beat for over 20 years. You're close to retirement. Problem is you got 7 kids. 3 of them are sick, right? But you don't, you do have some kind of health benefits with work. Your health insurance premiums are through the roof. And you're about to retire and get a fat pension, okay? Not to mention you got a sick grandma. You got funerals around the corner coming up. They aren't cheap. You walk in, you're confronted with a 6-year-old girl. She's crying. By all accounts, the little girl was being a diva. By all accounts, this little girl needs teaching a lesson. Do you still get on your high horse and say, I quit? 100%. Fuck my kids. Fuck my life. Fuck my mortgage. I'm out of here. Officer Louise is done with this shit, Holmes.
I have a better lesson to teach my children in not fucking doing that to a little girl than worrying about my mortgage and my rent and my being 20 out and retiring. It's kind of interesting. So I used to do a show before I did the countdown with you on Sirius XM. I did a show called Tap Out Radio with the guys from Tap Out. It was Punk Ass and Scrape. Yep. And it was Punk Ass who told the story, about it was interesting. It relates to all this, right? So he was a cop and he told the story on the show, and I'm going to probably butcher it, so I do apologize, but essentially he pulled a guy over one day and the guy's insurance had been expired or whatever it was. He was on his way to work speeding or whatever it is, right? His insurance was expired. Now in the state that he was in, it was California. Whatever the infraction was, or it was suspended license, whatever it was, he had to arrest the guy. There wasn't a choice. It's just the standard. Like, you have to be arrested. Yep, they have to impound your car. And he was like, the guy's like begging me. He was like, dude, I got to get to work. I got kids. He was like, you know, I didn't know my insurance was expired. Like, and he was like, no matter whether the guy was bullshitting or not, he was like, I'm sitting here like, I'm turning this guy into a criminal in this moment. He's trying to go to work. He just fucked up, whatever it is.
Listen, let me finish. I know where you're going. He let him go. He didn't
arrest
him.
Let him
hold
go.
On, hold on.
He quit the fucking job. No, he stopped. He quit being a cop. And it was a powerful story because he stopped doing that because he said, I don't want to be a part of that. And I think that's really... You know, that's something that's interesting, and you don't really hear too many people telling that story. So, no, I really do believe that deeply, and especially with someone with a little kid, like, yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't be a part of that, for sure.
What he left out of the story is that they were just about to sell Tap Out for $350 million, and therefore he didn't need it. But it's okay. It made him look like a badass. I have no idea if that's the case. I'm joking. But, yeah, man, come on. I mean, listen, the poor little girl, it's a slow news week. I saw that and thought, we got to talk about this because we're both parents. We've both got youngsters. I mean, what would you do if you found out when you left the studios right now and you get a phone call, James has been arrested, baby James, as good as he is, has been arrested and is currently in the back of a police car, zip tied like a common thug.
What would he do?
What would you do?
What'd he do? Like, is he like a serial rapist? Like, your child has been terrorizing prostitutes across the country. It's been a...
I'd be kind of proud of him. I'd be proud of him. I'm like, fuck. All right. Okay, James.
He's a fucking serial killer. If my son was a killer... I would be like, literally, because you hear about that, right? So do you hear these stories about like little kids who like do like crazy shit, like they kill somebody or they like really like crazy? And I don't know what I would do. Like, what would I do if my kid killed somebody, right? Like my little kid,
I've actually had this conversation with Rebecca. I'm like, what would you do, babe, if I went out and I got into a fight or whatever and I accidentally killed someone and no one was around? Would you cover for me? If he came back and the cops were at the door and I needed an alibi and I punched the guy in the face, let's say, and there was no witnesses and he fell over and he cracked his head on the floor, would you cover for me and give me an alibi?
What'd she say?
Of course.
course she would.
Of course.
I would cover for you.
She ain't going to get a job anytime soon. Yeah. She's got to go. She wants to go horse riding. You know what I mean? She doesn't want to get a job and live in the real world. Of course she'll lie. She'll do whatever it takes to stay in this half mansion.
I don't know. Friends, who wouldn't cover for their friend? I don't know. It's kind of, you know, and then your kid is a whole other level. Like my son, I could not imagine them taking away his freedom, dude. It really breaks my heart just thinking about that little girl. Think about how scared you'd be as a little kid. You know,
or maybe the cop's going to teach her a valuable lesson. I mean, who knows? Maybe she goes off and learns to control her emotions better. Maybe she learns that for every action, there's a reaction. There is consequences to being a little diva that you can't roll around on the floor. Apparently, she had assaulted her grandma. You know, I'm just giving both sides here.
Did she say advocate. Did she say she assaulted? No, I think she said they didn't say she assaulted her grandmother. She said the grandma. Do we have a quote? She was like acting out or something like that.
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I believe that but even so, it doesn't matter. You're a fucking kid. A child is, a six-year-old cannot hurt you. A six-year-old girl really can't hurt you.
No, I doubt it. I don't know. I mean, a six-year-old girl with some kind of weapon against Harrington, I would definitely fancy the six-year-old girl.
Who would you rather in your corner, a grandma or a six-year-old girl? 90-year-old grandma, six-year-old girl. You're in a bar fight.
God, it's hard. I know. They're both equally annoying. You know,
they're both equally weak. I think the grandma and the six-year-old girl is a fair fight, to be honest with you. Tale of the tape.
I'd say the grandma. You could at least send the grandma to the bar and she's going to get served. It's like, listen, grandma, nip to the bar. After I take care of this guy, I'm going to knock him out real fast. I want a couple of whiskeys in the locker room. You go take care of that. I'll take care of her. The six-year-old girl, I mean, that's annoying. But saying that, then grandma's going to be peeing herself and stuff like that. The six-year-old girl, you just give her some crayons, a little coloring book. She's going to take care of herself. She'll be happy as Larry for hours.
Very true.
So it says she punched three employees of the school where she was arrested.
She punched three employees? Yeah, because she's not, though. It's because
she's out of control. She needs teaching a lesson. You can't go around assaulting people, Lucas. Lewis. Well, she assaulted three people. Assaulted.
She's six.
Assaulted. I mean,
she's six.
I don't care.
And where do you think she learned to assault people? Where do you think
the nasty world.
She's
TV.
She's a fucking. This little girl's. This little girl's a victim.
There's violence on TV. She is a victim. She's a victim. But so what? The other three people that she assaulted, they're also victims. She's gonna learn. I'm sorry. Lock her up. Throw away the key. Simple
you've changed.
As that.
You've changed your mind.
I've changed my. She assaulted three people. I assaulted three people. I go to prison. I'm sorry. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. I don't care if you're six. Get fucked. Prison.
I agree with you.
Fuck it. You know what? I changed my mind too. Fuck that bitch. Yeah. Give her the chair. Lethal injection. I say kill her. Kill her for her infractions.
All right, guys. Let's just take a quick second to hear from Blue Chew. All right, here's the deal. If you like sex, then you're going to love Blue Chew. Blue Chew offers a performance enhancement for men in the bedroom. I mean, come on. Wouldn't you like to last a few extra rounds? At BlueChew.com, you can get the first chewables with the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, and chewables can work faster than pills. In fact, they work up to twice as fast. The chewables from BlueChew.com, they can be taken on a full or an empty stomach. And the beauty is you don't have to go and see a doctor. You can just do an online physician consult, which is free. So it's cheaper than the other two, the Viagra and the Cialis. And as I said, it only takes a few minutes to connect with the BlueChew.com affiliated physician. And if you qualify, you will get prescribed online very quickly. So, as I said, no in-person doctor visit, no awkward conversation, no waiting in line at the pharmacy, and the Blue Chew will ship directly to your door in discreet packaging. The chewables from BlueChew.com are prescribed online by a doctor and made in the USA. Blue Chew gives you confidence in bed every single time. You and your partner are going to love it. So, go ahead. What are you waiting for? Chew it and do it. And of course, I believe you me, we have a great offer for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com. That's BlueChew, BlueChew.com. Use the promo code BELIEVE and just pay $5 shipping. That's it. Just $5 shipping. Go to BlueChew.com. Use the promo code BELIEVE. And go and wow your significant other. Light up their lights. Give them the night of their life. Maybe the day of their life. Whichever it is. Whatever time of day you want to chew it and do it, that is up to you. But go to BlueChew.com for all your needs. Your sexual performance increases better than Viagra, better than Cialis. And there you go. BlueChew.com. promo called Believe.
All right, all right. We've chatted enough about that. What I do want to talk about, and this is equally shocking in my opinion, equally shocking. We talked about Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder. It was a tremendous fight. Well, Tyson Fury was tremendous. We talked about it on the last show. But since then, excuse me, pardon me. Since then, Deontay Wilder has come out, and Harrington O'Brien, do you have the exact quote, please? But he is blaming the elaborate costume that he had on when he did his ring entrance. And it was quite the get-up that he had on. It was cool. It was very, you know, futuristic and robotic. And I don't know how you describe it, like a fucking robot vampire or something. But it was cool. But he's saying now that the weight of that thing, it was like 40 kilos. He's saying the weight of it is what made his legs tired. And therefore, that is why he lost the fight, which I'm just sorry. Oh, my God. Get a fucking grip. First off, how cool is that outfit, though?
What do you mean by cool?
What, you don't think that outfit's cool?
Not as a walkout outfit. No, not cool. That's
okay,
not what I'm
saying. Okay, so all right. In what capacity is it cool? Hold on, I'll go first. I think like the main boss at the end of a video game, he walks out with that, and you're like, oh god, this is gonna be hard. Get some fucking extra credits ready because I'm not gonna beat him on the first go.
That would be cool. Or like, let's say you say some sort of like evil spell to summon Satan, and one of his guards pops up out of the ground, and that showed up. Like, that's a fucking cool Satan guard outfit. Yeah. That makes sense.
He's like the guy. Which one was it? Stannis. Stannis on Game of Thrones when the vision came and killed his brother and stuff. You know, yeah. Something like that. That would be cool. You're right. Maybe walking into a ring, not the best choice, but still, that's what he does, right? And he's saying that he got heavier. Harrington O'Brien, do we have the exact quote, perhaps?
Yeah, I got it here. He didn't hurt me at all. The simple fact is that my uniform was too heavy for me. Wilder told Yahoo Sports, I didn't have no legs from the beginning of the fight. In the third round, my legs were just shot all the way through. But I'm a warrior, and people know that I'm a warrior. I could easily be that I told it I didn't have legs or anything. A lot of people were telling me it looked like something was wrong with you. Something was, but when you're in the ring and you have to bluff a lot of things. I tried to do my best. I didn't have no legs because of my uniform.
Well, I'd be embarrassed as well. Deontay Wilder, I'm just going to throw it out there, should be fucking embarrassed. Listen, the fact of the matter is he's hurt. He lost the fight, and he's looking for something to blame, someone to blame, just some other reason for him to have lost that fight. And the problem is, because he is so good, because he is undefeated, his brain, he just can't compute it. He can't handle the fact that he was beaten by a much better man on that night. Now, perhaps the weight may have detracted a little bit, but that was your choice. You chose to wear that. You must have tried it on. Even when you put it on backstage, you might have thought, you know what? Fuck this. This is too heavy. Take this off me. You went out there. You got beaten. Tyson Fury landed a lot of big, heavy punches, right? And you're just embarrassing yourself. You're embarrassing yourself. Just hold your hand up and say, listen, I was beaten by the better man. Take advantage of the rematch clause in your contract and go and try and do better next time. Don't look for something as laughable as blaming your costume for the reason why you lost. I mean, come on, get a grip. This pisses me off because a lot of fighters do this. A lot of fighters, when they get beat, I don't know, maybe I've done it as well. I don't think I have. But when they get beat, they look for something to blame. You know?
Yeah.
More often than not, you were just beaten by the better man.
Yeah, 40 pounds. It was a 40-pound suit. I was trying to figure out the math on kilos because I have no idea, but it's actually 40 pounds. $60,000.
It was 40 pounds, but it's 2.2 pounds to a kilo, so it's probably about 16 kilos, which, let me tell you, isn't very heavy. I mean, yeah, okay, it'd get tiring after a while, but it's not that heavy. I mean, think of soldiers, you know, Marines, soldiers, infantry members going out there for hours and hours and hours on exercise with these backpacks on, with their guns, their boots, all that shit. He fucking had it on for 5 minutes walking to the cage. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like he had to do fucking pull-ups in it. He had to walk to the cage. And I mean, maybe there's some, here's a reality. You sort of touched on it there, which is like, he probably believes that at this point. Like somewhere he was able to connect those dots in his head. He was like, fuck, that was it. That was my moment. Like a lot of times you play back a loss in your head. You're like, what was the moment? And in his mind, he was like, god damn it. It was when I was sitting down with that costume designer and I decided to do this Black History Month $60,000 King outfit. Look, it's stupid. Nobody wants to hear that. you know, whom I don't know, man. He's a great boxer. He knows more about promoting himself than I know about promoting myself as a boxer. So sure, maybe I'm wrong about it, but I just don't like any excuses, even if they're real, even if that's the truth, even if they came in with a scientist and said that that's the reason he lost that fight. I just don't want to hear it. I want to hear from the fighter, hey, man, the better man won. I'm going to come back, and I'm going to beat him. And you keep that as your trump card in your head. You go, cool, you know what? He has no idea that it was that costume. And you go and use it, and you win the next fight. It just sounds like making excuses. And fight fans, I don't think they want to hear excuses. They just want to hear that you're ready to go and fight again.
Well, it's damaging your reputation even further. Because you went out there, you had a bad fight, you got beat. You're no longer the champ, okay? So your reputation has taken damage for sure. Then on top of that, you got two ways you can play. You can be a man, you can hold your hand up and say, you know, I was beaten by the better man, but I've got a rematch clause. I'm going to take advantage of that and try and get him again. And even if you lost in the rematch again, they'd be like, well, so what? He had the balls to try again. But to stand back and then blame it on a costume, to look for any excuse, it's just not attractive. It's not attractive, and it further damages your reputation. Now you're no longer the champ, and now you're stretching, you're coming out with stupid things like that, you know. So Deontay, man, I'm a big fan of you as a boxer. I love watching him fight. It's super exciting. I like the way he handles himself outside the octagon as well. I find him very compelling to talk. You know, I like to listen to him talk. He speaks very, very interestingly. You know, but it's funny, you know, going into that fight, he was talking about murdering somebody. He said he wants a body on his record. He said, which is shocking, to be honest. And I don't know if he really meant that. But if, you know, if you're going to go out there and you're going to talk about possibly ending somebody's life in a boxing match, you got to be fucking man enough to accept that you got beat and not blame it on your fancy fucking costume. Yeah, you know what I mean?
You, like, better, come on, bud. You better at least lose a close decision. Jesus Christ, dude.
Yeah, exactly. Come on.
I'm going to murder him. What? He's got knocked the fuck out in 7 rounds.
Live by the sword, die by the sword, go out on your shield. I mean, there's got to be some kind of joke there with the fucking suit of armor that he had on. Do you know what I mean? I don't know what it is, but you live by the sword, die by the sword. You want to go out on your shield. I don't know. You're the comedian, Lewis. Give me a joke there. Come on. Perform, monkey.
Whoa.
I like Lewis.
Thank you, Brendan. Thank you.
All right,
Brendan.
That's an expression. Come on.
That is true. So yeah, look, nobody likes excuses. We'll see. The rematch will happen. I'm sure at one point they'll be giving news about that, which will be exciting. We'll all watch it. Good for them. You know, the reality is this. You know, he's got to keep on making sound bites, keep on getting people talking about him. It's not bad if people are having a discussion. Almost any time they're talking about you, it's not really a bad thing.
But they say there's no such thing as bad news, you know, but I don't know. Like, Harvey Weinstein just got some bad news. That's bad news. I don't care. That's not good press. That is not good press. He is not going to see the light of day for a long, long time. Rightly so, Harvey Weinstein was found guilty of multiple rapes, and he's gone. You know, there is such thing as bad press.
Yeah. I think he actually was, he got off on the more harsh of the charges. So he got, yeah, I guess the less...
Yeah, no, he didn't get the life sentence, but he's still going away for a long, long time.
I believe I read it was the sentence could be, is it probation up to 4 years? He could get off of... I was saying this earlier today.
Oh, come on.
Look that up. Maybe I'm wrong, but how funny... I do not want Harvey Weinstein to get off. So let me just make this very clear, because he's a piece of shit. But just to watch, like... everyone's heads explode, because I mean, he has to go to California to face other charges, but how funny would it be if he got off on probation in New York just for like 5 days to watch the fucking world crumble and watch everyone's heads explode, and then go to California and convict him of some higher crimes. But maybe that's just the troll in me. Just, oh man, imagine he got probation. People would fucking lose it.
I mean, come on. I mean, you know, when you just look at him, I mean, you shouldn't judge a book by its cover. But I know he was trying to, like, make himself, you know, look more frail and weak and pitiful and get the judge and the jury to feel sorry for him going in on his little walker. He was not doing himself any favors. He looked like a fucking piece of shit rapist. He did. He really did. And I'm happy he got found guilty. Anyway, all right, we went off on a tangent there. What do we want to talk about? What's going on in the world of the mixed martial? Arts of the mixed martial. What is going on? Where do we want to start?
There's some fights this weekend, which you're going to go out and you're actually working the card this weekend, which is very exciting. Where is it at?
Norfolk, Virginia. I will be looking for a gym. You know,
not One Life.
We talked about this in the last show. One Life Fitness. I've been. I'm giving them a shout. I'm going to see what they're all about.
If you go to One Life Fitness, I will never speak to you again. We will not be fucking friends. And all of your circle of trust secrets that you've told me, I will spill onto the subreddit.
What about this, though? What about this? Maybe I just go there. It's like it's a test. You know what I mean? I have a secret camera. And it really is a customer review test. And I go there just to see. And maybe I have the same experience as you, Lewis. And we use that and we show it to them and they train the staff to get better. Or maybe I go and the people are nice and polite and they give me a free workout. Maybe they give me a free protein shake on the house on my exit.
You try to give them your ID. They're like, no ID necessary, sir. Please.
Mr. Bisbee.
We know exactly who you are.
I'm surprised you haven't got a team of assistants working for you. We had some Joe Schmo in last week, quoting his assistant, didn't have an ID. I'll be there, Norfolk, Virginia, commentating that one. Deaverson Figueredo. I know. Here's the thing, you know, the 125 division, it was almost eradicated. And I think we can all credit Henry Cejudo for kind of saving that, because TJ Dillashaw went down from 135 to 125, as we all know, and fought Henry Cejudo. Henry Cejudo smashed him. I think it was like 40 seconds, whatever, knocked him out and became a two-weight division champion. And I think based upon that, they were like, hold on a minute, we can't get rid of that division. And I'm glad, because there's a lot of extreme talent in there. I mean, this Deaverson Figueiredo, he's fucking good. He's a finisher. I think his record's 17-1. One loss in the UFC. It was a pretty close decision as well to Alexander Pantoja.
No, who's the Formiga?
Oh yeah, Juicy Formiga. Formiga, sorry, pardon me. But then you got Joseph Benavidez, and I'm so happy for him. There's a guy, Joseph Benavidez, has been around this sport for a long time, all the way back in the WEC. He's been in the UFC forever as well. I remember once I was a co-main event to a Joseph Benavidez and Demetrius Johnson fight.
How mad were you? You were the main. All right,
I was the co-main event.
Oh, you were
the co-main event. Main event was supposed to be something else. It was supposed to be, I think, John Jones and Chael or something like that. I forget. But anyway, that got scrapped. And fucking Demetrius Johnson versus Joseph Benavidez were the main event, right? And like I was terribly shocked by the size of them. And they kept saying to me all the time, hey, Mike, how's it feel to be our co-main event? How's it feel to be our co-main event, you little fuckers? But Joseph Benavidez, he deserves it, man. He's an OG, hell of a fighter. Great guy, fucking awesome dude. So I'm looking forward to that one. But I'll tell you something, just going back to that Demetrius Johnson, Joseph Benavidez fight. When we were there, we did a press tour. I went on top of the CN Tower in Toronto with Brian Stan, and we squared up. It was fucking awesome. We went to the top of the CN Tower. They put like harnesses on us, and we went out like walking on the rim, leaning over like to the city of Toronto in the background, and we squared up. Iconic picture, if I do say so myself. Yeah. And UFC got us tickets for Coldplay.
Where did they put the Joseph Benavidez and Demetrius on top of?
They were inside the little pocket.
A dollhouse?
The little Johnny pocket, we call it in England, you know, little condom pocket. Yeah. They were just like popping their heads out going, hi, everyone, we're here. No, they did the same thing. And but Coldplay were in town when we were there, and obviously UFC are using the same arena, so they had some ins. They got us some tickets. So I went to a Coldplay concert with one of my cornermen at the time, and we went there. It was cool. It was good. And then I looked around. There's Joseph Benavidez and Demetrius Johnson at the Coldplay concert together. I mean, it was so nice. It was beautiful, but I did make fun of them a little bit. Even at the press conferences, I mentioned it again. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be around my opponent. You know, but they were so professional. Like, no, we can go and enjoy the music of Coldplay and Chris Martin and hold hands and be very forward-thinking in the year 2012, I think it was, and then still go on a fight later. You know, you got to respect that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a fan of Joseph Benavidez. He's a cool guy, too. I've interviewed him a few times. He's dating the UFC commentator chick, right? or married, maybe.
Megan, whoa. UFC commentator chick.
What?
I mean, number one. How many layers of disrespect? You couldn't remember a name. She's not a commentator chick. You mean the terribly hardworking, professional, and diligent Megan O'Leary, backstage reporter, anchor on the pre and post fight shows. Oh, you mean that commentator chick?
The set of legs and boobs, you know, back there, doing the yapping. All right, sweetheart. Yeah, give her a microphone. We care about your thoughts. I'm kidding. Megan's actually. We've interviewed Megan as well. She's very, very sweet. So I am just kidding. No disrespect to Joseph Benavidez and his lovely, lovely girlfriend or wife or whatever the fuck she is. So look, that should be fun, man. I'm excited about it. I don't really know much about Davison Figueroa. Figueredo. Yeah. But yeah, it should be exciting. That should be good.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a fucking great fight. I'm telling you, Benavidez is on fire lately, and his opponent, Figueiredo, same way. He's a finisher, man. He really is. So it's going to be a tremendous fight. Keep an eye out for that one. Also got Iwan Kutalaba taking on somebody from, I forget his name, Sergey Spivak, is it? No, it's not. That's the heavyweight fight. I don't know. One of those Dagestanis, you know, one of those Russians. I forget the name right now. But went over there and got my notes. I could dazzle you with brilliance. I've been doing a lot of research for this card. You have to. But that should be a good one.
Look, I'm excited about it. Looking forward to it. Make sure you guys go get your bets in. I'm going to maybe throw a little bit of money down on our boy Davison Figueiredo.
All right, guys, let's just take a quick second to hear from good old BetDSI. You know the deal by now, BetDSI.com. If you're watching the fights this weekend, you want to make it better, simple as that. Put some money on it. Feel that you have the prowess, what it takes to predict a winner. Well, put your money where your mouth is. Go to BetDSI.com, make a little flutter, and it will make the entire experience way better. And of course, the reason we recommend BetDSI.com to you is because they've been in business for a very, very long time. They're A-plus star reviewed, rated on all review sites. They have built a history on fast payments of winnings. We know that is a very important detail. So basically, you know, they've got fantastic customer service. I mean, what more do you want? Lewis, tell the people about BetDSI.
I'll tell you right now, they really are the easiest to use website. Every time I go on one of these gambling sites, I get so confused. I don't understand anything. BetDSI makes it so simple. A child can use it. We actually have a pretty amazing deal. Okay. Obviously, just gambling in general is a lot of fun. Okay. Go throw $5 on the next time you're watching a sporting event. I guarantee you're going to care that much more. But we give you a pretty cool deal because if you like to gamble, we give a little bonus match here. If you use the promo code BYM120 at BetDSI.com, they're going to give you a 60% bonus match for anything you spend up to $1,000. So $100 turns into $160 to gamble with, $1,000 up to $1,600 to gamble with. You throw that money down, have a lot of fun with it. I should say, if you do opt in for the bonus match, there's a rollover requirement, meaning that you have to gamble a certain amount of times with that bonus money before you can pull it out. Or you could just opt not to. You could just gamble right away and pull out your money right away. Completely up to you. Either way, use that promo code BYM120.
And you know, you touched on something there, Lewis, the easy to use mobile interface, because I've tried it on some websites back in the day, of course, and it's a real pain. Sometimes, you know, it takes a long time to sit there and decipher the code to just make a bet. With BetDSI, as we said, it's a very, very simplified process. So go to BetDSI.com, take advantage of the code that Lewis said. And yeah, good luck, my friends. Good luck. All right. Talking of, we mentioned Demetrius Johnson, of course, and Henry Cejudo. Henry Cejudo is in the news as well. Henry Cejudo just finally booked a fight, defending his 135 belt against Jose Aldo. Harrington, I know you're lurking in the background. Hold on, can we talk about Jose Aldo's appearance there? Does he look a little weird there? Is it me? What is going on?
He looks gaunt, which is funny. It's almost like they actually took a picture of him at 135 pounds, because usually his face looks a little more filled in.
That's how I used to look walking out of Monroe's at 6 o'clock in the morning when I used to DJ. Oh dear. Anyway, Harrington, what's going on? People aren't happy, correct? People are pissed. People are screaming uproar.
Yeah. So the biggest thing that jumped out to me, there's only been one time that this has ever been done before. The Frankie Edgar went on a 2-fight losing streak to Benson Henderson and then fought Jose Aldo for the title down at featherweight. Now it's going to happen twice within, I think, a month of each other when Yoel Romero on back-to-back losses faces Israel Adesanya for a title and Jose Aldo fights for a title on back-to-back losses.
Chael Sonnen
well.
Had back-to-back losses when he fought Jones.
John Jones, Yoel Romero, the list goes on, Harrington. Redeem yourself.
He had just lost to Anderson Silva. He was on a 2-fight win streak, which is how he got the rematch for Anderson Silva, lost that, and then fought Jones. So he lost back-to-back.
Hold on.
He wasn't on a 2-fight losing streak when he fought Jones. I guarantee that.
All right,
well, I'll tell you this, baby boy. And a lot of people aren't happy, like Aljamain Sterling is pissed. Who else is there? Piotr Jan. I think he's on a 9-fight streak. But the UFC want to make big fights, and Jose Aldo's been around forever. Honestly, I don't have an issue with this. I really don't. And it's not that I'm kissing the UFC's ass. I'm not backing up Dana White or whatever, because, you know, they don't give a shit what I say on this podcast, you know. I don't have an issue with this. Jose Aldo has put in the body of work, been around so long, and when he fought, was it Sergio? No, Marlon Moraes. He fought Marlon Moraes. It was a close fight, and I thought fucking Aldo won the fight. I thought Aldo won the fight. If he'd have won the fight, we wouldn't be bitching about this. And I feel that the judges got it wrong. And Cejudo said, no, I want to fight Aldo. And Dana was like, well, I thought Aldo won the fight as well. So fuck it.
And this was also said right after the fight. This isn't anything new. Dana White said that night, he said, yeah, we're going to probably make Jose Aldo the next title fight. So I don't know why anyone's complaining now. This is actually them just following through on what they said right after the fact.
This is them following through and doing the right thing. You know, because, the topic of incorrect judging has been at the forefront lately. It's been mentioned a lot. You know, there's a lot of mistakes happening. And, you know, all right, sometimes I got screwed on the judges. It would have been nice if I still got a title shot after it. You know, Chael Sonnen, whatever, that was a close fight. Chael still got the title shot. But still,
you know,
I'm not
one
to make, I don't make excuses.
Mike, you know what it was, though? I think this is why Harrington's technically wrong still. Because, all right, he's right. He lost to Anderson Silva, and he was on a 2-fight win streak before that Anderson Silva fight, and then he fought John Jones. But what we're failing to recognize was that one win was against you, and everyone knows that is a widely contested split decision and very, very close. And nobody really believes that Chael, including Chael, Chael whispered to you in your ear, he said, you're the winner here, no matter what happens. We remember the story. So that's really what happened, Harrington. Bisping won that fight, so I count that as two losses for Chael. And once again, we're right, you're wrong. Thank you.
You're right, my mistake, Lewis. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Yeah. No, but listen. I feel like the UFC are doing the right thing here. I feel like they're doing the right thing. I mean, of course, they're probably doing it because, you know, all right, listen, if you put it all together, the fight's happening in Brazil. Aldo's a big deal in Brazil, but of course this is a pay-per-view, which is predominantly aimed at the American market. So, and Aldo won that fight. When I watched that fight in the arena, I'm like, yeah, Aldo won that fight. The judges fucked up. And the UFC is sticking to the word. They said, no, we're going to give Aldo the fight. So I understand people like Aljamain Sterling that have been around for a long time. And I think Aljamain Harrington, if I'm right, I think he's on a 6-fight win streak, you know. But you got to remember, he did get smoked of Marlon Moraes, unfortunately. I understand why Aljamain is pissed. I understand why some of the other people in the division are pissed, you know. But, you know, come on. As a fan, I want to see Henry Cejudo versus Jose Aldo. That's a fucking intriguing fight.
And also, to be honest, Jose Aldo, I feel like he was screwed out of that Conor rematch years ago. So, fuck it. You know what? Maybe karma is coming back and you give him one, man. Leave him alone. You know what? He's probably got one run left, right? Jose Aldo is at the end of his career. So, as a business perspective, especially if you go like, he won that fight. He sort of got fucked. You go, he's got one run left. We could either see Jose Aldo retire right now or have him fucking go for a real run and maybe become champion again. But you're getting the best out of him. The best Jose Aldo you're going to see, the absolute best possible Jose Aldo right now. And I think that's only a positive thing. And to be honest with you, having these guys, having a few more contenders sort of fight it out and figure out where their place is not a bad thing. You've seen way less deserving guys who just happen to have a few fights, you know, a few wins that nobody's really excited about. They go get smoked, they get starched, and the division sort of stands there and they stand still. So at least this is really exciting. It gets eyes on it. People are excited about it. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, so on the I was sat on the toilet this morning reading an article from Ariel Helwani. And Ariel, you know, he didn't agree with it. He didn't like it. And he was comparing it to the Super Bowl, saying fucking teams don't get to the football teams don't get to the Super Bowl by losing. You know, and I kind of see his point. But this isn't the Super Bowl. It's the UFC. It's one-on-one sports. And the UFC is a private company and they make whatever decisions they want. And the decision they're making this time, A, as you just said, is to reward in some kind of roundabout fashion a guy that's been a longtime stalwart of their roster, a guy that's dedicated his life to mixed martial arts, a guy that was the longest reigning featherweight champion that they had, a guy that's still performing well, a guy that's been a good employee for the company, and they know that he's near the end of his run, the end of his career, and he's been good for the UFC. So they're saying, hold on a minute, he fucking won that fight. Everybody had him winning that fight. He's been good to us. Let's do the right thing for him towards the end of his career. I think there's a little bit of that going on. And to be honest, I'm happy that's going on. And as you said, it gives everyone else in the pack a chance to figure itself out and get a clear-cut number one contender after this fight happens. I'm happy for Aldo. He deserves it. And yeah, as a fan, as I said, Cejudo versus Aldo, that's a fucking interesting fight. A very, very interesting stylistic clash. And I'll be honest, I got to lean towards fucking Aldo in that.
Really?
Fight.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. As we get closer to the fight, obviously we'll do our picks and analyze it a little bit more. But I agree with you. I think that Jose Aldo, the other thing is probably the only marquee name at 135 pounds right now that could fight Cejudo. There's nobody else that would. And I know it's not always about moving the needle, but it's like you said it before, it's good for the goose, good for the gander. The more eyes on the sport, the better it is for everybody involved. In fact, it's better for all of the guys of the 135-pound division. You know, the reality is Cejudo's becoming a star. Jose Aldo is already a star. And the more interest they sort of kick up for that division and for those guys, it's only going to be that much better if Aljamain fights next. It's going to be that much more interest, that many more people that are interested in the fight.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the rankings here. Cejudo, obviously, then you got Marlon Moraes, Aljamain Sterling, Piotr Jan, Corey Sandhagen, Rafael Assunção, Jose Aldo, Pedro Munhoz, Jimmy Rivera, Cody Garbrandt, and then, you know, it kind of goes down from there. So, I mean, yeah, listen, he's ranked at, where is he? Well, he would be number one had he beaten Marlon Moraes, because Marlon Moraes is the number one contender. And as we just said ad nauseum, everyone thinks he won that fight. So there you go. Case closed. Job done. Well done, UFC. And all the other guys, they're all still young. The UFC is still going to be there. You know, Cejudo, if he wins, he's still going to be fighting. And they're all still hungry. So there you go. Well done. Well done. What else is going on?
Question, though. The only other little thing on that, has Jose won a fight at 135 pounds at all?
No.
Well, I think before that, his last fight was against Alexander his last fight was against Alexander Volkanovski, which he lost a decision to. Then he came down to 135, I think. And a lot of people were worried about him. Everyone was worried about him making weight. He made weight. He looked sensational, but lost the fight on the judges' scorecards. So I think that gives extra weight to the argument of why they shouldn't have done it. But
my only concern at all is him not even clocking a single win in the division. You know, that it's, and that's not, it doesn't give me extreme pause. I'm just saying that it's it's not ideal.
You know, it's funny that I mentioned that you asked that, and I mentioned Alexander Volkanovski. Volkanovski, he's fighting Max Holloway, immediate rematch, so he's getting his immediate rematch. It's great. UFC 251 in Perth. Rebecca was just in Perth. I don't think I'm working that fight. I want to go to Perth. Fucking, they go to other places. Like, I'm going to Norfolk, Virginia. I don't have family in Norfolk, Virginia. They were going to have a show in San Francisco. I have a son in San Francisco. No, they changed that and put it somewhere else. Now they're going to Perth. I have family in Australia. Come on, throw me a bone here. But still.
You know, I'm performing in San Francisco next, or in April. You should come up with me. We should add a live San Francisco BYM. I'm going to be there already doing stand-up shows, and you could fucking hang it.
I'll come, and I think I'm going to be at Skankfest if you still want me.
What?
Woo! I think I'll do it.
Yes, I still want you.
Podcast,
100%.
Okay. All right, well, let's figure out travel. You'll have to pay the cost change.
Hotel, going, you got a nice hotel. Yeah, we'll take care of travel. We'll be paid too. You'll be paid handsomely.
Oh, yeah. So much money going through your bank account these days. Well, it's obviously insane. But yeah, okay. Skankfest, South. Houston, whatever
March,
it is.
March 29th, live BYM. If you guys, there's single day passes available for the just the Sunday as well. If you guys just want to come for Sunday in Houston, it's going to be crazy. I mean, I'll tell you off air, the special guests that we're not even allowed to mention right now, it's fucking crazy this year. 100
it was
comedians.
Rebecca, by the way. It was Rebecca. She said, Rebecca, Michael, you should go. You should go. You should go. And I'm like, no, I know I want to, but I'm just traveling so much. I want to come back and see the family. And she's like, Michael, you should go. You'll enjoy yourself and it'll be good for the podcast. I'm like, you know what? You're a wonderful woman. You're absolutely right. But also on the Alexander Volkanovski versus Holloway card, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. What am I saying? Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Valentina Shevchenko taking on Joanna Calderwood for the 125-pound title. So well done, Joanna Calderwood. We'll try and get her on the show, actually. Joanna's a nice girl. You know, I know her through combat, if you will. Yeah, Joanna's awesome. That's an interesting fight. The only problem is I want Joanna to win. But as of right now, I'm the one and only British or UK champ. You know, we can't. Joanne, I wish you the best, but you ain't taking my title, girl. But saying that, no, she'd be the first female. All right, okay, I'm on board. Let's go.
It's fine. Real quick, because we do have a little more to talk about, and we have some questions as well. Let me just do some plugs really quick. Right now, go to our YouTube channel, subscribe. You get a notification every time we do go live. We love the live chat as well. We always join the live chat whenever we're available. Also, go subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you download your podcast. Super easy. Just subscribe. Leave us a little 5-star ranking, positive review. Obviously, tell your friends about the show as well. And you should know that every episode we've ever done beyond the latest 30 episodes that you can get anywhere, you can get them at gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the promo code BYM. Get a 14-day free trial and get access to everything we've ever done here on the Gas Digital Network. Let's see what else is going on story wise. I mean, it's sort of a slow news week. The only other thing, I mean, this was Harrington put in the notes. We didn't really discuss it at all, but, Joanna calling out Colby, which is kind of weird to me. I feel like,
what is Joanna saying to Colby?
Cause they're teammates, right?
Yeah, yeah, American Top Team. I know nothing about this. So paint the scene, set the scene, paint the picture. Give me some information, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, well, apparently Joanna doesn't like Colby, and she's been shitting on him for a while. Harrington, give me some quotes here specifically what her issue is. But
well, she said that he was very disrespectful, especially in the lead-up with the Kamaru Usman fight. He was very disrespectful to many of the people at ATT. And basically, what her quote here, he has to bow down to the queen and say sorry. Colby should be more respectful to his teammates and women in general. He should learn how to say hi, I'm sorry, I apologize. He's getting there.
He's getting there. And she called herself the queen?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Well, she calls herself the strawweight queen. I mean, she kind of lost me with that one, but I get it. I think that's a little tongue-in-cheek. I think she's messing around there. Joanna's got a good sense of humor. I like her. I'm a fan. She's a hell of a fighter. But that's Colby's whole shtick, isn't it? You know, he stands there. He has like the couple of C-minus strippers in the background feeding him grapes and giving him a massage and stuff like that. That's his whole thing, you know? So, I wouldn't hold your breath, Joanna. I would not hold your breath on getting that apology because I don't think it's going to happen. And I think Colby's good, isn't it? Colby with Dan Lambert, he's the owner of ATT. I think them two are still pretty tight. I remember Dan Lambert, who owns ATT, he was a few seats down from me when Colby was fighting Kamaru. And he was rooting for him hard. He was cheering. You know, you could tell he was passionate about him. He's one of his guys. You know, so I don't know. Do you think she's serious? I'm just wondering if this whole thing with ATT and Masvidal and now Jędrzejczyk and them all talking shit, are they just having a laugh at our expense and they're all just in on the joke?
Well, I have one more quote from before the fight with Kamaru Usman. She said, I never wish any fighter to get like hurt, but I wish that Usman will beat his ass. I shouldn't say this because you always want to support your people, but Colby is not a friend. He's just acting weird. He's an ugly guy. You never talk bad about your teammates. Doesn't matter if you like them or not.
Is it a work? I don't know. It seems like there's some truth to what she's saying there in terms of the way she feels. They'd be very... It's not very pro wrestling. It seems very scathing and real, that comment. But I mean, I guess there's no, is that a faux pas to sort of shit on your teammates and say you're rooting for somebody else that they're about to fight? I mean, you really, if I run a team, I don't really want that necessarily, but you know, you're not necessarily supposed to be friends with everyone as well. It is an individual sport.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a tricky one. You know, it is a tricky one because you are supposed to support your teammates, you know, regardless, you know, and I don't think the owners, coaches, whatever, would, they don't want that division, you know, because you all train, maybe not always at the same time. You know, you obviously go off one-on-one training sessions. You work with a pad man. You might do specific drills with a wrestling coach or whatever. But there's also team practices, and you want a good morale on that mat. You know, you want everyone in there. You know, when there's a good morale, when there's a good atmosphere, people train better, you're having a laugh, and it's a pleasure to be around. You don't want you know, you don't want negativity in the air. You don't want people, you know, you don't want toxic relationships and just like little fucking dramas like this spilling out onto the mat and then affecting everybody's training, you know, because that's what it will do. Ultimately, it's going to affect training. They're going to argue. They're going to bring all that negativity and hostility into the training room. And who knows, maybe people get fucking hurt, you know, because you are going to put gloves on, you are going to spar. And if there's a little bit of a secret beef that you're not divulging to the group, who knows, maybe you know, maybe you fucking swing a little bit harder, maybe the point of the kneecap connects with the nose, maybe you accidentally stamp on their throat, you know, I mean, who knows.
Just smash cut to Colby beating the shit out of Ioana. Just fucking, what'd you say, bitch? Apologize to the queen. Yeah, we'll see about that.
Good for the goose is good for the gander. Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there obviously creates some sort of weird tension. I've noticed, look, in the past, you know, without divulging circle of trust stuff, I mean, there's been times where you've said, hey, you know what, I'm going to bow out of that conversation because this is, I have a mutual trainer or a training partner or whatever it is. And there's just no reason to go and publicly talk shit. So here's the thing with Ioana, right? Like, she doesn't really like Colby, and she really doesn't, right? And she hates him, and she thinks he's a piece of shit. I think that sort of the protocol should be like, well, you know, maybe have a conversation with him off record. There's just, to do it in interviews, I feel like it does sort of create a tension, and it is a little bit disparaging to the team. And you're trying to create an image of unity if you have a team, you know? So there's something about that, but honestly, Colby must be, he does rub a lot of people the wrong way. So, you know, maybe it is his fault.
No, maybe it is. Maybe it is. As we said a moment ago, it is a slow news week. So I just thought I'd take a quick look on MMA Junkie while we're talking. And there is a developing story. The main event, breaking news, breaking. Text your thing. See this here. See. Says here.
This American news, not that bullshit British news.
Yeah. Chino Ortiz's submission win over Alberto El Patron for Combate Americas has been changed to no decision. So if you remember, Tito Ortiz took on El Patron from WWE. I don't even know if he was, but whatever.
Alberto Del Rio.
Dude recently, Alberto Del Rio. There you go. And Harrington, are you seeing this? Can you see this? What is going on? Tito Ortiz submitted Alberto El Patron this past December. But as of now, in the eyes of the commission that licensed it, this win has been wiped off the books. The current state of Ortiz's rear naked choke win over El Patron in the Combate Americas Tito versus Alberto main event is a no decision, according to official results paperwork from the Department of Texas Licensing and Regulation. The results of the fight were changed pending further investigation.
Ooh.
I wonder why.
Is it because Tito Ortiz took Nicole Arbour's side in our public feud? Maybe. Possibly.
Is it? Yeah, I don't know. If I remember rightly, he held the rear naked choke on for a little bit long. Remember that? Well, I don't know if you saw it.
I think
it,
you get fined. I don't think you overturn it, though, for a no decision. I think you get fined, maybe, or whatever it is. You get in trouble for that. It's a dick move. Yeah. But they wouldn't overturn it, no?
No, you're absolutely right. They wouldn't overturn it because the fact still remains. You did still choke him unconscious. You know, you may get a suspension. You may be banned from competing in the state of Texas or a fine, as you said. Yeah, they wouldn't overturn that because, yeah, that doesn't make sense.
It's one of two things. It's steroids or...
Drug test or... Go ahead.
or that Del Rio hadn't competed in so long that when they investigated sort of Tito Ortiz fighting this guy who's, you know, a fucking tomato can, that it shouldn't count as a professional win. Which I don't know that they've ever done that as well, because they did give him license to fight, right? But that was sort of when he even fought him, I was weirdly surprised. How long had it been, Harrington? How long had it been?
No, I'm sorry. I mean, I appreciate the pondering, the assumption for the sake of discussion, but that doesn't make sense either. Just because, you know, maybe he shouldn't have been sanctioned in the first place, the fact is it did. It went ahead. And you can't punish Ortiz for that. Ortiz went out there and beat whoever was in front of him. The fact they're turning this to a no decision right now is something specifically to do with Ortiz, because he was down as the winner.
What's the difference between no decision and no contest, though? This is also bizarre as well. I don't even know what fucking no decision even means. That's why
I have no idea.
No contest, I would say. We've heard of no contest before. You hear about decisions being overturned for steroids, whatever it is. And also, I mean, you know what? The other thing, where is this at? This is Texas. I don't know the rules there, but I know in Vegas now, they don't say what it is until they do the investigation when it's steroids. So that would leave me to believe, if this was Vegas at the very least, that probably is the case. No contest decisions in mixed martial arts. All right, that's not what it is. We're saying no decision versus no contest.
Yeah. I mean, it says, I'm just trying to read it because I'm trying to talk and read it at the same time. Given the fight was initially a win for Ortiz, changing to a no decision indicates something amiss, as I just said, from the Ortiz side. You know what I mean? Something amiss from the Ortiz side. Mange, whoever he is, said that the TDLR, the Texas Department of License and Regulation, I'm just going to take a stab that TDLR means that Texas Department of License and Regulation, if it is, I'm a genius, could not elaborate on the reasons for the results change. Pending further investigation also presumably leaves open the possibility the decision could be reverted back to the original submission win if no wrongdoing is found. If no wrongdoing, see, that's very telling. You're investigating something on Ortiz's side. I would say, and I don't want to put this out there, so I shouldn't say, but I don't know, it alludes to a kind of fishy drug test, maybe. And I shouldn't say that because I'm putting it out there, but they're fucking investigating something. What else can they be investigating? His sweat, his adrenal glands, investigating the technique that he used of the choke. No, the only thing they're going to investigate is his blood sample, I would think.
A lot of people would say the moment Tito Ortiz sided with Nicole Arbour during our public feud was the moment that his career started going downhill. People have been saying that. So
I've seen it on Twitter, on Reddit. Somebody sent me an Instagram message saying, you know, I used to be a big fan, but then he took Nicole's side, whoever Nicole is.
Remember that, that blonde bitch?
Whoa. Easy, Tiger. Come on.
Whoa.
Come on.
If I can disrespect Megan O'Leary, I can disrespect Nicole Arbour, okay?
You will not disrespect Megan O'Leary on this podcast, okay? She's my co-host. She's a wonderful person. And her husband, boyfriend, significant other is competing in the world title fight this week.
Whatever their relationship is.
Regardless. All right. So Tito Ortiz, eh? Well, that's interesting.
We'll see. I honestly am fucking around. I am and will remain a Tito Ortiz fan, even though he really fucked me in the ass, really bent me over, really disrespected me. It's okay. I do wish him the best, and I hope that he wasn't cheating. I hope that he wasn't doing anything like that, because I use Tito as an example of, like, look, dude, he's still fucking out there doing it. He's a guy that people have been telling to retire for a long time, and he's still competing. He's still going out there having fun. You know, fuck it, dude.
I'm going to say this. I don't think it's that. I don't think Tito's going to be taking steroids. Number one, somebody like Alberto Del Rio, no disrespect to him. Tito should walk through somebody like that anyway. You know, he's been doing this for so long. Secondly, he's got to be close to the end of his career. Why would he risk his legacy being tarnished, you know, to take steroids to beat somebody like Alberto Del Rio? It just doesn't make sense. I don't know. Listen, the human mind is a curious thing. You know, people do weird things. They make silly decisions that they later regret. So who knows? But if I was a gambling man, I wouldn't say it was that, although the wording of that article certainly does allude to that. Another one here, Khabib Nurmagomedov, says that the McGregor rematch is all about drama. I did see this earlier somewhere else. He said, talking to TMZ, I do think people want to see it. Just what happened last time. He said, who do you think, guys? Who do you think is going to win? 99% people are going to say, like he did the first time. Hold on, what am I reading? Oh, here we go. This is what I was looking for. He said, regarding the rematch, if we're talking about money, this is good. If we're talking about drama, this is good. Oh, hold on. Yeah, yes, no problem. If we're talking about the money, this is good. Okay, if we talk about drama, real drama show, this is good. If we talk about real lightweight contender or a real lightweight championship bout, this is not good. This is not a real lightweight championship fight. But if we talk about drama and money, of course, this is good. But I come here to make my legacy.
That was great. I mean, actually, I for a moment, I thought we actually had Khabib calling in. I got distracted. That was so good.
I mean, I don't have like the big helmet thing, but I do have something similar.
Oh, boy. By the way, he has a table of props that just sit in front of him like it's morning radio in the 80s. What is this?
Yes, big drama show, big drama show. This is a signed Texas Motor Speedway helmet signed by Bubba Wallace and Ricky Steinhouse Jr. Fox, UFC
Ricky Bobby?
Fox. Just not Ricky Bobby, Ricky Steinhouse Jr. Ricky Bobby is a fictional character. Still, now my championship hair is all messed up.
Flung it across the room. He's like, this is a championship helmet. Yoink.
No, it's right there. It's still there. Yeah, so Khabib, not looking for that rematch. No. And he is looking for legacy at this point. So I kind of get it, you know, but that is a rematch that everyone wants to see. I don't know. What do you think, Lewis?
Yeah, I think it's unavoidable. That rematch is going to happen. If he talks about him not wanting it, whatever it is, it's just adding fuel to the fire. Anytime he thinks about Conor McGregor adding fuel to the fire, that fight will 100% happen again. I promise you. Mark my words. Conor versus Khabib will happen within a year, I'll say. Conor, we don't officially know what the move is for Conor yet, right? There's not any official movement. They talked about it being Khabib. I mean, it's simple as this. Money talks. Khabib probably made more money off the Conor fight than he ever made off of anything else. He'll probably make more money off the rematch than he's ever made before. And there's a way to get that deal done. You know, even with him, the way he's talking about it, it's not like he's saying he never wants to fight him again. He's just saying like, oh, it's not really the ideal. That fight will happen.
Yeah. Ali Abdelaziz's manager, he was talking as well on Twitter this week saying, listen, we're not interested in that. And I'm just wondering if they're just saying that to drive up a better deal. You know, because Dana said a couple of things regarding this. Dana said when I worked with him on an ABC pre-show thing for the Conor Cerrone fight, he said, listen, McGregor wins this. The next fight is him versus Khabib. Simple as that. But you've also got Khabib out there saying he's not bothered about money and he's not interested in that. But that said, he says he's not bothered about money and that's not his motivation. And Dana did say, listen, Khabib's made a lot of money. He's a very, very wealthy man. And there does come a point, you know, where you're like, okay, I've earned enough money and I can still earn good money by beating other people, the rightful contenders. But also, you do have that little fucking thing on your shoulders. Like, listen, I take this fight, a fight that I already won, a fight that I dominated him the first time. I could make $20 million from it. Fuck me. Come on. Money talks, bullshit walks a marathon or something like that.
Yeah, there's no way. He's going to... It's also, I mean, you said it yourself. I mean, he won that fight so handily. Why wouldn't he? I mean, fine, legacy, whatever. It's just like you're just walking into just money bags. And his manager probably has to be going like he, because that's bullshit too. You know for a fact, his manager
The manager wants the biggest fight possible, okay? The 10% goes from fucking chump change to ka-ching. Do you know what I mean? That's what he wants.
Yeah, his manager is not concerned about fucking legacy. His manager wants to put as much money in the bank as possible. So whatever Alibaba is saying.
Whoa.
Don't you ever fucking correct me again, Harrington.
I had something to add to it.
What?
He is in the news today now. Yesterday, Ariel Helwani said that they were looking for a Conor McGregor versus Justin Gaethje fight over the summer. Ali Abdelaziz came out and said the rumor about the Justin Gaethje fight versus Notorious absolutely false. He had the opportunity to fight him already instead of Cowboy, but he didn't. Justin is the number one contender, and like Khabib said, Conor needs 10 he needs to win 10 fights. both guys managed by Ali Abdelaziz, you have to assume that's going to be their number one contender.
No, it doesn't matter, because even Ali Abdelaziz makes more money off of Conor versus Khabib versus Justin Gaethje versus Khabib 10 times over. Justin and Gaethje and Khabib could fight 10 times in a row, and he would make a fraction off of one rematch. Get the fuck out of here.
I'm just laughing because you call it Ali Abdelaziz.
I have Ali Abdelaziz. I got to watch what I eat. I have Ali Abdelaziz.
The Ali Abdelaziz, it's a bad one. It's like, ooh, I had a curry last night. I got the Ali Abdelaziz.
Have you checked your gut health? Have you recently checked your gut health? I have Ali Abdelaziz.
Do you have Ali Abdelaziz? Just take one of these a day. We're not calling the episode Ali Abdelaziz.
Okay? We are 100% calling it Ali Abdelaziz.
Listen, take two of these a day and your symptoms of the Ali Abdelaziz will be taken care of once and for all. Although, side effects include vomit, nausea, signs of death, paranoia. Won't be able to sleep at night. You'll have the shits for weeks, but the Ali Abdelaziz will be taken care of. Fucking that gets me every time when the TV commercials are here. You know, side effects include, then they speak at a million fucking miles an hour and tell you every fucking symptom under the sun. It's dangerous. Anyway, what was I going to say? Yeah, no. Ali's a great guy. Great guy. I like him a lot. You know, he's always got positive things to say to me. I like the guy. But yeah, he wants the Conor fight. I'd say, I mean, of course he wants Justin Gaethje to fight for Khabib because he gets paid on both fronts there. But also, you know, it's not all about money. It's not all about, I mean, listen, that is the driving force in a lot of things. That's why everybody does business. That's why we're doing this podcast. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I do it without the income that we earn as well. It's a lot of fun. UFC, they're passionate about the sport, but they may do it for the money. Fighters, they're passionate about that, but they do it for the fucking money. So, of course, as a manager, he's trying to get paid. He's trying to set himself up financially. But you do care for your guys. And when you have a lot of guys on the roster, which Ali does, you're not necessarily nickel and diming. And sometimes you might do the right thing. Sometimes you might say, fuck it. Justin is the rightful contender. So, therefore, I want to see him fight for the fucking belt. You know, there is potentially that to think of, Lewis.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, we are just speculating. I don't really know what's going on. And to be honest with you, I don't really know the numbers. He might make 10 times the money off of a Justin Gaethje fight. I think Khabib at this point is a pretty big pay-per-view star in himself. And of Justin course. Gaethje is an extremely exciting fighter. So they can really put that together and package it well. I'm just saying, I think that rematch is needed. I think that it's not crazy. I mean, the way Conor beat Cerrone, and I know that Khabib had some disparaging sort of comments about Cerrone. He said he beat what did he say exactly, Harrington? He said something like he wasn't very nice to Cerrone in terms of the way he described it. But the way Conor beat Cerrone was crazy. It was complete domination. It was, I mean, even when we've seen Cerrone lose fights and get dismantled, it wasn't like that. And with the way that he did it and with, you know, how excited, you know, the whole show that was around it, in my opinion, that was enough to make the case for that rematch. And it's going to happen anyway. So why have either one of them possibly lose, right? Conor could lose next fight. Khabib could lose next fight when that massive fight is just sitting there.
Everyone just keeps assuming that Khabib is going to beat Tony Ferguson.
Yes, I know.
That's a difficult fight. It's happening in Brooklyn. Maybe I'll try and get up there for it. I won't be working it, but I might come up. Maybe we'll do a couple of episodes in studio. Maybe we could do a Believe You Me, a live version around there.
I love it.
Yeah. Let's do it. But anyway, I do got to catch a flight to the airport. Jefferson Figueiredo and Joseph Benavidez require my attention. I know you got questions, but we're going to have to put them on Monday's show. I'm going to line up some guests for Monday's show. It's going to be mind-blowing. It's going to blow your mind. But until then, I've got to bow out, Lewis, and say goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Bisping. Enjoy your weekend, Norfolk, Virginia. Do not go to One Life Fitness. And we will be back on Monday with another incredible episode of the Believe You Me podcast.